You're tuned to an encore presentation of The Sound of Ideas. This program originally aired at 9 this morning, so we can't take your calls, but we'd still love to hear your thoughts. Send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Sound of Ideas.
It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for joining us. In the U.S., the standard is to tip around 20% when dining in at a restaurant. But a growing number of services are also asking for tips, like when you pick up for takeout, grab a cup of coffee, or get a tattoo. That's thanks in part to more and more businesses using those cashless credit card readers with payment apps like Square and Toast at the checkout. That makes it very simple for businesses that didn't ordinarily ask for tips to now do so. Tipping has been one custom where there are no rules and regulations, just guidelines, and it can be stressful for some, including rideshare drivers who have little control over the apps they use.
You are at the mercy of the app. You're at the mercy of technology. You're at the mercy of people who are, kind of controlling these systems.
A new survey by the Pew Research Center found 72% of U.S. adults said they saw an increase in the number of places expecting tips compared to 5 years ago. But only about a third said it's easy to know whether to tip or how much for different services. Today, we're going to spend the hour talking about tipping, free of charge to the listener, with reporters and an etiquette expert. Joining us by phone, we have Drew DeSilver. He's a senior writer at the Pew Research Center. He's one of the co-authors of this survey. He's here to break down those findings and explain what they mean. Drew, thanks so much for joining.
Well, thank you for having me, Jenny.
Ann Carnes is a freelance contributor with the New York Times who reported on the survey, and she writes a weekly column for the New York Times called Your Money Advisor, covering personal finance topics. Thanks for calling in, Ann.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And we have Lisa Mirza Grotz. She's the former director of protocol for the city and county of San Francisco and a certified etiquette expert with 24 years of experience. She calls herself the Golden Rules Gal, and she'll give us the rundown on how to approach tipping this year. Welcome.
It's nice to be with you, Jenny.
Thanks, Lisa. And we'd love for you to weigh in on this conversation. Do you think tipping requests have gotten out of hand, or do you disagree? And are you clear about when you should tip and how much? We'd love to hear your thoughts. We know this is a big topic for people. Most anyone can relate. Call us now at 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. All right, Drew, I'm going to start with you. Tell us more about the survey that was conducted by Pew Research, and what are some of the big takeaways and findings?
Well, we interviewed about almost 12,000 people to find out sort of how they tip and why they tip and how they feel about tipping in general, because as you said, it's something that pretty much all of us can relate to whenever we do, whenever we engage with any kind of a service industry these days. It seems like, it seemed to us, wow, we're being asked to tip a lot more often. And we thought, well, is it just us, or do other people feel that way too? And in fact, as you said, about 7 out of 10 people say, yes, we are being asked to tip more frequently than we used to be. And we found that along with the fact that people are feel like they're being asked to tip more, they're not confident about how much to tip. There's not a whole lot of agreement on when to tip or even why we tip. We asked people, do you tip because it's a social obligation? Or do you tip because it's a personal choice? Or does it depend on the situation? And the biggest group of people said, well, it depends on the situation. So that's not much of a guidance right there. And then we asked people, how much do you tip in different circumstances? And it ranged all the way from, 92% in restaurants to 12% down in in fast food type restaurants. And only a quarter of people say they always or often tip their coffee place, which surprised me. I always assumed that tipping your barista was sort of standard, but I guess not. It seemed to us, it confirmed to us that there was an awful lot of uncertainty, and as you said, there's no hard and fast rules governing tipping. It's the sort of thing that we're supposed to pick up by osmosis, I guess, from society. And a lot of people feel like there's not a lot of good rules about it, and there's not a lot of agreement on how much to tip. You mentioned in your intro that the standard for restaurants is 20%, but we found when we asked people how much would you tip for just an average meal at a sit-down restaurant, over half of people said 15% or less, which
was
rather surprising, yes.
And did you find that there were thematic factors that drove people's decision-making in each tipping situation?
We asked people in general what their factors were and how much they, or whether to tip and how much to tip. We didn't have room to ask in each specific situation, unfortunately, but we did ask, we gave people four choices. What are the biggest factors in deciding whether to tip and how much to tip? And overwhelmingly, the number one factor that people cited was service quality. And for Americans, it seems like, tipping, the idea of tipping is very much tied to service quality. We did ask, how much people make pre-tip, does that factor into your decision making? And about a third, in fact, a little less than a third of people said that was a major factor in their decision making. So it was similar both deciding how much to tip and whether to tip at all. So it's for Americans, I know there've been some folks who are trying to get people to think more about, in a lot of situations, particularly in restaurants, tipping is essentially, it's a wage supplement. It's, part of the wage of the server is being not paid directly by the their employer, but being paid by the customers. And some folks want people to think more about that when they make tipping decisions. But at least when we did the survey this past summer, that has not percolated through to most of the public.
All right, Anne, let's talk about the rise in a meteoric rise, it seems, in the touchscreen card reader at a checkout counter. Mm-hmm. It has the screen that prompts the customer to tip the business. I often see a minimum of 15% all the way up to 25%. Tell me about that advent and how you see it affecting the trends.
Sure. So it seems as though it's kind of a confluence of factors. The rise of these digital systems that allow you to use a credit card pretty much everywhere you're checking out. And those kind of came into vogue almost around the same time, I guess, as the pandemic was hitting, and people were wanting to be more generous, perhaps, in tipping service workers, frontline workers, who kind of had to be out there anyway. And so since then, that's kind of given rise to this term, tipflation, where it just feels that you're being asked in more places. People do feel, as the survey showed, that they are being asked in more places to tip where maybe they hadn't before. And it is partly a technology issue where these payment systems, from my reporting, I was told that the systems come with a default setting to allow them to ask for these tips. And so it just kind of is easy for businesses to do it. And so they go with it. And here we are where we're seeing them more often. So
tipflation is more about the prevalence of a source asking for a tip as opposed to the rise in how much people are being asked to tip.
Well, it's not really a formally defined
term. Sure.
It's, and I first saw it being used probably sometime in 2022 when inflation itself was increasing. And so it just kind of became a catchy term for journalists and researchers and other people to use to kind of get across this idea. I think it maybe combines both, this notion that you're being asked to tip more often and perhaps asked to tip more because some of the defaults maybe range from 15 to sometimes 25%. Some people say they've seen it even as high as 30% markets. So that gives you the idea that you should be tipping more.
I want to go ahead and hear from a gentleman named Alan Newberry, who we spoke to. He owns Bay Window in Akron with his daughter, Holly. Here is what he had to say about the card readers.
To be honest, I'd be happy if it wasn't on there at all.
Oh, wow.
So I'm serious. I'm not here to try to get to sell this and then get a tip on it. It's not what I'm about,
right.
At least in my store. If it wasn't there, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
And if now just learning this from you,
yeah.
I will have Holly look into this. And if we can eliminate that, great.
Yeah.
Or if we can modify it, great. And maybe cut down 30% or whatever. We don't need a 30% tip. Or, you know what I'm saying? That's not what we're here for.
That was Alan Newberry talking to our producer, Jay Shaw, about the prompt that you'll see on a cashless touchscreen to make a payment for Bay Window in Akron, which, you know, I don't know if people would think, oh, yes, tipping for a window service. But again, he said he would turn off that prompt and would rather not have this option. So, Lisa, I'm wondering, is this something that you feel affects how people should tip or not with the prevalence of these cashless card readers?
Well, it's all very interesting, the comments so far. And, you know, just what you said, I don't think the great debate is these cash readers so much that the tipping point was really the coronavirus. It happened in 2020, mm-hmm. you know, when a handshake became a weapon and cash was no longer king due to the germ factor. So many establishments went digital way back when. The problem is a lot of people are used to cash, such as the silver set, you know, who aren't proficient in technology and are offended when they go into a, you know, a chain coffee store, they buy a cup and then they're prompted $1, $2, or $5. Like that doesn't make sense, right? The tip's going to be more than the coffee. So my take is that these screens are only awkward if you let them be awkward. There's nothing wrong with just saying no or not hitting a $5 button when you buy a $2 cup of coffee. You know, you can still throw a dollar in the tip jar the old-fashioned way. I mean, chain stores have them and mom-and-pop stores have them. But to qualify with this gentleman with the windows, I mean, there must be hundreds of different manufacturers of these machines, right? I mean, you're not going to tip at a dry cleaner's. I don't tip when I go to In-N-Out Burger. You know, I'm talking, you know, he's already including the service with his payment plan. So some of the places, I think it's ridiculous that they even have them, that you're even prompted for them.
So then is there a variance then? You know, let's say someone's going to a fine dining restaurant or a dive bar or a coffee shop. How does tipping etiquette play into right. this?
Well, you know, I was quoted in Newsweek in an article about when Starbucks, for instance, rolled out their digital tipping and it went viral on TikTok. What I said was no different than a cash tip. A virtual tip is no different. I mean, if you get it, you give it from an etiquette standpoint of view. I mean, I don't see a difference in tipping a Starbucks barista who's making you an $8, you know, grande pumpkin latte and tipping a server, say, on an $80 steak dinner. I don't see the difference that way. And I know it feels punitive because of tipflation and the new digital nature of it, but I think there are no set rules, and that's why it's confusing. But if a service is offered, even during hard times, it still requires a level of generosity from a patron.
If you want to participate in the conversation or have a question for our panel of experts, you can call in 216-578-0903 or 866-578-0903. You can email at soi@ideastream.org. Let's go ahead and take a call from listener John calling in from Kent. John, good morning. Thanks for calling into the Sound of Ideas.
By the way, I agree 1,001% with that last young woman on your panelist who immediately in the last minute made that comment. Plus, I'm going to add that I've been following 15% plus rule for most of my life, particularly during the COVID between 2020 and 2022. And I always stress to my friends and other people, don't get uptight. You're the customer. Control the dynamic. There are so many ways in which you can control this. I even go as far as to, if I enter an establishment and they have one of those gadgets that you just talked about with that person off mic and the young woman commented on the panelist, I even tell them, listen, I want to tip you, but for you to get my tip, I don't want any of these options. I want to pay my bill, and I want to put 15% or more into the tip jar. And you know what? Since I control the dynamic, I'm the consumer. Guess what? They acknowledge it. All you have to do is tell them this with a smile, and they give back, meaning they give you the option.
Great. Thanks for the comment, John. Appreciate it. And I think John makes a good point about a feeling, excuse me, of a customer having autonomy in the whole tipping process. I'm curious, Drew, I know that you all at Pew surveyed people's kind of emotional reaction to the growing prevalence of tipping requests. So what are individuals' feelings about tipping currently?
Well, I think your last caller really hit on something, which is that Americans, from what we could tell with various things that we asked, there seems to be a trend or a general theme that Americans want to be in control of their tipping decisions. They don't want them to be made for them. We asked people, there are some places you'll go to, sit-down restaurants mostly, that will tack on an automatic service charge of, you know, whatever percent onto the bill. And we asked people, how do you feel about that? And overwhelmingly, almost 7 out of 10 people say they oppose those, and fully half of people say they strongly oppose those. We even asked people, you know, how about when businesses just suggest a tip amount, like on the machines, or even at the bottom of a bill, when you get the bill at the restaurant, they'll sometimes say, you know, tip suggestions. And people aren't really crazy about that either. More 40% of Americans oppose just even suggested tip amounts. And when we ask people, is tipping a matter of personal choice or is it a matter of social obligation? Only 20% of people said it was choice, but there was definitely a feeling that among people that they want to be in control of that choice. They want to be able to decide how much they tip and in what circumstances.
To listener John's point, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And when we return, we will continue this conversation about tipping, which I'm finding riveting, with our panel of guests. That is when we return on The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back.
Support for WKSU is provided by Mitchell's Ice Cream, handcrafting ice cream in Cleveland since 1999. Made at Mitchell's Ohio City Kitchen using fresh ingredients from area farms and organic and fair trade ingredients from around the world. Mitchell'sHomemade.com. Support for the State House News Bureau stories heard today on IdeaStream Public Media comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 120,000 educators who are united in their mission to create the excellent public schools every child deserves. More at ohea.org.
You're tuned to an encore presentation of The Sound of Ideas. This program originally aired at 9 this morning, so we can't take your calls, but we'd still love to hear your thoughts. Send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Sound of Ideas.
I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. Thank you for staying with us this hour. We are talking about the changing landscape and trends of tipping. Joining me is Ann Carnes, contributing writer at the New York Times, Drew DeSilver, senior writer at Pew Research Center, and Lisa Mirza-Gratz, an etiquette expert in San Francisco. Anne, I want to ask you, in your reporting, anecdotally, or I know you spoke to some experts as well, do you find that a person's socioeconomics, you know, how much they're making, and geography played into their feelings on tipping?
I didn't get a sense of where you are, whether you know, where you're located makes a difference necessarily. But one thing that I found fascinating from the survey that I followed up on in my reporting is whether or not having worked as a tipped employee influenced whether you tip. And it in fact did, and maybe Drew would remember the exact percentage, but it was fairly significant that they were more likely to leave a tip if they had worked as a tip employee. And I know in my personal experience, when I was a teenager, I worked with two friends cleaning hotel rooms. And so I always try and leave a tip for the housekeepers when I stay at a hotel. Although it's, you know, I just remember as a teenager, this, you know, spark of pure joy when you would walk into the room and there would be cash for you. Even if it was just a couple of bucks, it was a, you know, a big deal because it's a thankless job and a hard job. So one of the issues now, though, is that I rarely have cash. So I really have to plan ahead if I'm traveling to make sure that I do have cash. And that can be a factor for some people.
You know, and it's so interesting that you bring up your job cleaning hotel rooms, because I always have that feeling if I'm staying at a hotel of wanting to tip, you know, usually the women who are cleaning your hotel room. As you said, it's often thankless. Often I find that there's a lot of women of color working hard, no matter what race you are. And you feel like, you know, because they're not there in your face asking for the tip, sometimes it's easier to if you don't have cash on you, to ignore that and then maybe tip the person who's helping you, you know, if you valet your car or something like that. So I feel like it really perfectly exemplifies sometimes the quagmire you're in with tipping, especially when you want to help someone or you know, commend them for doing a great job. Let's go ahead and take a call from Etricia, who's calling in from Columbus to the show. Etricia, thanks for calling into the Sound of Ideas.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make the comment that TIP stands for To Ensure Promptness. That's where the original idea came from. I don't feel responsible for the wage that a person makes. I feel that I want to show my appreciation for the kind of service that I get. So my tip indicates how well I'm served. So I make sure that I also have cash, and I want to give the person cash because I don't want my money manipulated by the employee or maybe distributed to someone who is not doing a great job at serving.
So that is a great point, Etricia. I appreciate you calling in. And I'm curious, Lisa, what you might say to the idea that, you know, the tip is something, let's say, extra for the customer who feels that the service has been done, you know, beyond, as opposed to something that is almost added like a, you know, mandatory surcharge.
Exactly. I agree with Etricia that, you know, the adage to ensure prompt service in normal times was always to tip on the quality of service. Nothing has changed. You know, then came COVID and the service industry was hit hard. So a little bit extra, you know, made a big difference for these people. But it does seem that every time we go out and we check out that it's punitive, you know, that we're on a screen and it's asking for us to prompt and it feels like we're being fleeced for something. But, you know, I agree with Drew and Anne and all the polls that unfortunately all these added service fees, you know, have cut into the bottom line for us, the consumer. I mean, why should I pay health insurance, right, for an employee? It's not my job. And, you know, many would argue that people in the service industry are not paid a living wage. This is probably a whole other, you know, segment. And therefore, they rely on tips. I know in California, where I live, the minimum wage is, I think, under $16, right? So it's not high. So you have an industry now that is, there's not a lot of people working. They're understaffed, and they feel they're underpaid, thus they rely on tips. But are the tips our responsibility? Absolutely not. We tip on good service, the quality of service, depending how much the bill is, et cetera, not because, you know, they are not paid a good wage.
Well, it's interesting because it's a bit of a chicken and egg sort of situation, because, of course, in one way or another, when we take part in a service, whether it's eating in a restaurant or getting a coffee or something, whatever it is, we are paying. We do pay their salaries. We do pay for their health insurance. We pay for their other benefits. It's just a question of how we pay for them. You know, are those, because the only way that the business gets any money to pay their employees and give them benefits is through their customers. And so the customers can either pay that up front, you know, with the menu price, you know, with the price for the taxi ride or whatever it is, or you can have a lower upfront price and then supplement it with tips, which is the way we generally do things in this country. Now, in other countries, they do things differently. All of those things are rolled into the sticker price that the customer pays for the service. And I've traveled a little bit overseas, and in most countries, if you tip at all, you tip just to sort of round up the bill. It's not considered an inherent part of the service worker's income, the way it is here. So we do pay for all that stuff. It's really a matter of how we're going to pay for it. But what I've heard anecdotally from, and we may hear from some of these folks later in the show, what I've heard anecdotally from restaurant owners and others is that customers are very price sensitive to, you know, menu prices. Say they would rather pay a lower menu price and then add a tip onto it. There have been some restaurants that have tried to go tip free and raise their menu prices to compensate. And I believe that in many of those cases, those restaurants have had to roll that back because customers just rebelled against it.
And I'm curious, as far as the employee goes, there is a categorization differentiation between a tipped and non-tipped employee. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes. Federal labor laws distinguish between non-tipped and tipped employees, and there's a different federal minimum wage for tipped employees. I believe the federal minimum wage generally right now is $7.25, and for tipped employees, it's $2.13.
Wow.
And that hasn't changed in a long, long time. So for the way it works is the tips are supposed to make up that gap. It's essentially a credit between the restaurant minimum wage, excuse me, the tipped employee minimum wage and the regular minimum wage. And it can vary by state. States can set a higher wage for tipped employees and some do, so it varies. But the idea that tips are voluntary is obviously accurate, but in cases of restaurant employees, it can be a significant part of their income. So if you are eating at a fine dining restaurant and you didn't leave, you know, you're there for a couple of hours maybe, and you didn't leave at least probably a 20% tip, you would probably have the server running after you when you left, asking what they had done wrong or what was the problem, because they do rely on that for their income.
And Anne, I know that in the article that you wrote about the Pew survey, you mentioned Ted Rossman, who encountered a tip suggestion at an airport self-checkout station.
Yes.
And at a pick-your-own strawberry farm, which may seem a bit peculiar and unconventional. I want to play a cut from a tattoo artist that our producer Jay Shaw interviewed about why they need tips. And here is what they said.
You have to consider that people in industries like the tattoo industry, we don't work for 8 hours. So I don't come to work for 8 hours a day, so that my hourly rate actually makes up for the hours that I actually am not working.
Yeah. So for some people who are kind of like their own bosses and may not have a steady, 9 to 5, as we call it, the tip becomes, for at least India, more important. Let's go ahead and take a call from John, who's been waiting patiently on the line, calling in from Lima this morning. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning. In the overall setting, personality plays a role in the service factor. You know, even if everything isn't 100% as far as, you know, food wise, if the personality, you know, if they act like they want to be there, I think that counts for something as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A gracious employee. I mean, Lisa, how would you say the kind of personal interaction between two individuals when a service is happening plays into the tip?
Oh, without question. I'm with John. If you go to a coffee house daily or weekly and you know the barista's name and you have a relationship with them, one of them prepared your drink, so you would tip. And you would probably just do it because you like them and you know them and they see you on a weekly basis. You know, and I think that's really important. And as the, you know, etiquette guest here, I think the best guide to everything we're talking about is generosity. I wish we were like Europe, how Drew said, where it's just included in the bill. You know, you just swipe and you say goodbye and you can tip extra, which is wonderful because we love superior service, and that's terrific. It just makes it so much easier, you know, and I wish we did that here for, you know, say 20% for not just parties of 6 or more, which would make life, you know, a lot easier. But, you know, I agree with what everyone has said, that the rules have grown so fuzzy. You know, it's almost like there's this gray area, like we're in politics, only, you know, grace should equal generosity. I mean, we just need to let that be our guide and use common sense and not feel obligated because these machines are always hitting us in the face. If you don't want to use a card, you can give cash and, you know, not feel intimidated by them. I mean, especially at, you know, dining, you briefly touched upon dining and takeout. If you're picking up food that is self-service, there's no need to tip, even if you're prompted, because no service has been performed, right? Other than by you. You just grab and you go. And I think some people look and feel like, am I doing something wrong? No, you are not.
An email came in from Mary that says, I was taught that tipping was part of our social conscience because employers were allowed to pay much lower wages to tipped employees. That 20% that I add helps to raise that person to the local non-tipped minimum wage. Mary makes a great point. And, you know, when I'm hearing that, you know, some tipped workers can make as low as $2.13 an hour, and, you know, the recommended living wage for a person nationwide is at least $15. You really do feel a sense of, you know, kind of collective responsibility that for some, tipping is a little more incumbent. Lisa, do you think there should be a lot of thought put into from the customer about who exactly they're tipping and how they're benefited from? And how are we to know exactly who is more dependent on it or not? I mean, I guess that's why you're saying it might be nice if it is kind of folded in and we don't have to think about it.
Correct. And you're right. How would you know? I mean, I don't think there's any way to know that. And you know, if you're going to walk into a 5-star restaurant and, you know, order a dinner for $100 or $200, you're going to tip, you know, based on the cost of the meal. But how am I going to know if someone has paid a $2 wage? You know, I don't. That doesn't seem like a good guide for anybody to follow.
I'm curious, Drew, did you find in your survey that people were confused about which services and more increasingly confused about which services to tip for?
Well, I wish we could say anything about increasingly, because this is the first time we have ever surveyed on tipping. We have nothing to really to compare it to. And if we get to do a follow-up survey some years down the road, then we can see what kind of a change there's been. But I do think that there's among people, I don't want to say a lack of understanding, but maybe there's not a whole lot of there's less clarity than there might be otherwise in terms of what tips are for and what they where they go. Like, for example, we asked people, this is one of the things that one of our callers brought up. We asked people, if you're in a restaurant, what's the fairest way to distribute tips? And overwhelmingly, 7 out of 10 people say, I want my server to keep all the tips that I give them, which seems straightforward, except that in a lot of restaurants, some other businesses, but mostly restaurants, a lot of restaurants pool their tips. All the tips that servers get are pooled, and they're shared amongst the front of the house workers, or in a few cases, if it's legal to do so, the back of the house workers too, like the dishwashers and the table bussers, who also contribute to your overall experience at the restaurant. But those folks, those latter folks, are paid minimum wage, unlike the servers. So in most cases, they can't participate in tip pools. The other thing that kind of complicates this situation, again, because it's not complicated enough, are these service charges that you start seeing in bills. I got a takeout chicken thing for my daughter last week, and they tack on a 5% health fee. And I asked the server, what is that and what does that go for? And the counter guy who handed me the takeout, he wasn't even sure what it was for. He said, health insurance, maybe? And I said, I sure hope so. But then there was a line also to add a tip on top of that service fee. And I have been studying this subject for months now, and I was hesitating about what I should add onto that bill, because I wanted to make sure that they got something, but I also didn't want to look like a chump when I was doing it.
All right, let's go ahead and jump. Let's go ahead and take a call from Robert calling in from Richmond Heights. Robert, thanks for calling into the Sound of Ideas.
Excuse me. Yes, I'm a person with special needs, and I tip based on the level of service and the level of help that I get. I mean, I can tip as much as 20-25%. I really don't care what the bill is, or as little as 5%. I think tipping should send a message of either good service or poor service. I mean, I've heard that if it's poor service, you just don't leave zero, but you leave something that will make the server think about it, the level of service that they perform in the future.
I appreciate that call and that sentiment. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we will finish the hour with this conversation. A lot of people on our phone lines talking about tipping and the changing landscape. That is when the Sound of Ideas returns. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back.
Terry Pluto brings a long perspective to Northeast Ohio sports. I'm Amanda Rabinowitz, and on Wednesdays, Terry and I talk about what's happening now. Last time,
when I talked to Ted Ginn, he's had over 20 guys go to the NFL, but a lot of his success stories are just kids that went to Glenville, graduated, and got a job, and went to a small college, and been raising the family the right way.
Hear my next chat with Terry Pluto this Wednesday on WKSU. You can hear all of our past conversations at ideastream.org.
When you become a sustaining member of IdeaStream Public Media, you'll unlock three exciting benefits. You'll receive our monthly digital program guide, access hundreds of hours of local and national PBS content on IdeaStream Passport, and get invitations for you and a guest to attend our monthly IdeaStream Passport Movie Club. And you can become a member for as little as $5 a month. Just visit ideastream.org/donate.
You're tuned to an encore presentation of The Sound of Ideas. Send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Sound of Ideas.
I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. We're talking all about tipping with etiquette expert Lisa Mirza-Gratz, senior writer at Pew Research Center Drew DeSilver, and Ann Carnes, contributing writer for The New York Times. Again, a lot of people have shown interest in the topic. I think a lot of people can relate to what we are talking about or works in the service industry and relies on those tips. Let's go ahead and take a call from Mark, who's calling in from Stowe this morning. Mark, go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I use an app that has a tip You know, it asks for the tip in the app, and I can turn it off and on. But there's another thing on there I think people don't know how they're running their credit cards for their small businesses or whatever, that the tip also will add another fee over what it is, even higher than the regular credit card processing fee. And the other thing people haven't mentioned is you pay these people cash, they don't have to pay taxes. And most of these people are the working poor. I have no problem paying them cash. Thank you.
Yeah, that is a question. I'm not sure who wants to answer it, but the difference between leaving a tip in cash for the person who gives you the service and then applying it, let's say you're at a salon, to your credit card bill for the haircut, is there, you know, a kind of a dissolving of how much the person gets if it goes to the top of the house instead of to the person who actually served you?
Well, I know. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We're all fighting. Jenny, Lisa Gratz here. I can weigh in. It's a good point. It's a great point. On hair salons, many hair salons don't even accept tips on credit cards. You have to pay in cash for that reason. So the money goes directly to the technician. But now there are, at least at a salon that I just started going to, sometimes I forget the cash, right? They have a separate till. It's called Tippy something. Drew and Ann probably know the name of it, where it has the picture of each of the stylists, and then it just goes into their direct Venmo account, if you will. Huh. So that is a really good point about cash.
Great to know.
Yeah, breaking it down.
I would only add that, and I feel obligated to say this, but legally, tips are income, and they are supposed to be taxed, and you are supposed to report your tip income on your tax bill or on your tax form at the end of the year. Now, it's widely assumed that there's a lot of underreporting of that, particularly for cash tips, because there's not really any way for the government to track it. But I think it's incumbent to say that legally, yes, you are required to pay taxes on all tips, regardless of whether it's electronically or cash.
Apparently, we have another expert on the line calling in from Akron. Nikki, you have some lived experience and can tell us what to do when it comes to cash or other types of tips.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to definitely appreciate that caveat that was just thrown in by your panelists that it is required reporting. I've worked in the past as a DoorDash driver, and let me tell you how important those tips are on those. A lot of times it's really hard to find the resources to even go to a lot of deliveries because you'll be getting paid $3.75 to take a delivery 10 miles. I made a policy of never taking any orders that were less than $1 a mile. And, you know, you pay an extra $5 to $8 for your DoorDash from McDonald's, and none of that goes to me. I also have a lot of friends who work as servers in the restaurant industry, and cash tips are always king. Yes, you're supposed to report them, but I'll tell you what, getting that cash in your pocket so that you can get what you need at the end of your shift instead of having to wait for it to go through all the other processes and stuff, always cash is king. And please, please, please put tips in on your food deliveries and your Uber drivers.
All right. I appreciate that call, Nikki. Let's jump over to Deborah calling in from Cleveland Heights. Deborah, good morning.
Hi. I'm a server, and I do take offense to the comment by the one woman that if you don't leave a good tip, your server's going to chase you out the door. That almost never happens. Also, I'm hearing people that are using tipping in restaurants almost in a punitive way. It's part of how I pay my bills. Most of us go to work, want to do a good job, but I think customers' expectations have gotten a little unreasonable over what they're expecting us to do.
All right. I appreciate that call, Deborah. And, Lisa, I'm going to go ahead and have you respond to both of these servers' comments about the fact that, you know, they're coming in foot forward, trying to do the best job that they can. And ultimately, this is a tip is about a customer's show of kind of appreciation, as opposed to something that should be perceived as punitive.
Correct. And we really haven't touched upon tips that we often forget because we don't see them that much. Say a tour guide or a bus driver or this woman who, you know, was a DoorDash delivery or a floral delivery. So, and I think the food online, this is one of those post-COVID rules that people were a little confused at, because a tip is in order, but you're going to be asked for the tip before a service has been performed. You see what I'm saying? Because you pay for it online before your food reaches you. But you still need to tip on it. But that's where it's grown, you know, fuzzy, to tip before a service has been performed. But, you know, this is, you know, I don't know, the woman who said, you know, she doesn't go out of her way if she doesn't get paid a certain amount. I don't know how that works. But I can see that for every delivery, pizza or otherwise, that is a service, and you tip accordingly.
Okay, we're heading into the holidays. People are shopping to maybe get Christmas presents and or a Hanukkah presents. And then people are also dealing with inflation and, you know, paying the rent and trying to work within their budget. So I'm curious how it goes with tipping as we enter the holidays, especially for the people who do services for individuals, you know, all year long, and it might be nice to kind of give that Christmas bonus. So I'm curious, Anne, what have you found in your reporting about the impacts of the holidays on tipping?
Well, in my reporting, I was advised that holiday tipping is a little bit different from tipping during the rest of the year. That holiday tipping is generally when you want to give an extra reward to someone who has been helping you throughout the year or maybe went above and beyond expectations. And again, as with tipping at a point of sale, there's not any hard and fast rules. These are sort of norms maybe for different cities or different areas or different lines of work, but that, you know, at a time when people may be, you know, paying more at the grocery store, that you sort of need to set a tip budget. You know, one advisor told me that he recommends his clients that they have a budget for tips and think about how much they want to give each person, whether it's a childcare worker. I mean, there's, you know, the amounts that you would tip vary greatly depending on the service provided. If you have a live-in childcare worker, a nanny, you might want to give them as much as, you know, a couple of weeks' pay, which for other people that might be out of their budget. You know, a regular housekeeper, you might want to give them the cost of one session as a tip. It really sort of varies. And it's up to you individually. If it doesn't fit into your budget that year, perhaps you could thank them verbally, give them a note, a handwritten note, or a small token of appreciation, essentially.
Yeah, and Lisa, I'll have you add onto that as our etiquette expert about the end of year holiday bonuses / tipping for individuals, you know, who are doing the service every day and don't get that extra boost, but you might want to show a little token of appreciation at the end of the year.
You bet. The end of year tipping is so much different than, you know, tipping on a cup of coffee or a meal, especially for caregivers, people who take care of our children, you know, housekeepers, dog walkers, valet, et cetera. What I do is I make a list and I have it on my computer called holiday tipping. And then I print it the 1st of December and I look and see, okay, who has done what? And exactly what Anne said, that is usually my guideline where I say, okay, I will give my, you know, hairstylist, you know, equal to one cut, you know, my housekeeper equal to 1 week cleaning, you know, something that hopefully fits within guidelines. And if I can't do as much, I will always write a note and or augment it with a small gift, a handmade gift, you know, something like that, something, you know, homemade.
What about the postal service mail deliverer? What about the mailman?
I don't think they're allowed to take tips.
Okay.
But my guy I've known for so long, I've definitely given him homemade food. I mean, and he's accepted it. We've even done that to the people that pick up our garbage, our refuse. They're great. We know them, and we just give them homemade goods, and they love it.
Yeah, and I don't know about you in San Francisco, but let me tell you, with the weather that we have around here, those are some of the hardest working bunch of the people delivering the mail every day when we've got some cold days or dealing with the trash. So it's definitely people that I recognize and wonder, you know, how to kind of show some thanks, because I think I know about the legality as well of not giving them actual cash, but some may choose to do so anyway. I have a couple of emails I want to read. Jillian said, I hear this show as I drive to the bank to get tip money for the contractor that is finishing up a job at our house. I never would have thought this 10 years ago, but my sister said it's now customary. And Audrey wrote, do I tip people who install my countertops? Do I tip the men who deliver my new washer and dryer? What would you say to that, Lisa?
Good question. We just had new countertops put in. We did not tip our countertop contractor because he charged us a fortune. We knew that. He wouldn't even expect a tip, nor would our electrician or our plumber. A mover is a different story. Someone who is moving furniture all day long, up and down stairs, et cetera, et cetera. You can offer to buy them lunch, you know, give them money to have dinner after, et cetera. I mean, this is the whole fuzzy part. You know, I don't think anything is set in stone. You have to do what you feel is comfortable, but I think it's a reach, some of these services.
All right. I want to read one last email from Miranda, who wrote, please tip carry out. 9 times out of 10, it is a server taking time away from their tables to pack your to-go order. That's 10 to 15% is my standard. Miranda, appreciate your thoughts. I want to thank all of our guests for participating in this panel. Obviously, a lot of people in our region, I'm sure all over the country, it seems like kind of one of those water cooler subjects, have thoughts on tipping and tipping as we get into the holidays. So I want to thank Lisa Mirza-Gratz, who is a certified etiquette expert, Drew DeSilver, senior writer at the Pew Research Center, and Ann Carnes, contributing writer at the New York Times. Thank you to all of you for calling in and taking the time for us this morning.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thanks for having us.
All right. You're with the Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. To get the last word on today's topics, you can send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're on Twitter at Sound of Ideas, and you can follow me at @JennyHamill_. Tomorrow on the Sound of Ideas, we'll discuss Cuyahoga County's vision to create more dense, walkable, transit-oriented communities. And of course, save the date for our next Sound of Ideas community tour. We will be discussing the state of school boards at the Hudson Library and Historical Society on next Tuesday, December 12th at 6:30 p.m. The event is hosted by our own Mike McIntyre and free and open to the public. If you missed any portion of the program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. I am Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for listening. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.